Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. More than 800 years ago, a man by the name of Giovanni di Pietro di Bernardone was born in Assisi, Italy. He went from an early life of relative luxury and comfort to a transformation and great spiritual awakening. He is known to us as Saint Francis, and his mission, his calling, was to embrace and emulate the life of Christ. He preached, "Your God is of your flesh. He lives in your nearest neighborhood, in every man." His legacy includes the Franciscan Order and the famous prayer in his name. In our world as it is today, is it possible for each of us to embrace the idea of loving and serving one another, finding forgiveness, and literally living the golden rule? My guest this week on Vox Novus, Franciscan brother James Twyman, is living this mission. James Twyman is the New York Times bestselling author of 16 books, including The Moses Code and Emissary of Light. He has also recorded more than 18 music albums, including the Billboard chart bestseller, I Am, Wishes Fulfilled, along with Dr. Wayne Dyer, as well as produced or directed 7 feature films. With a home base still in Portland, Oregon, James resides in Namaste Lake Chapala in Ajijic, Mexico. His website is jamesftwyman.com, and he joins us this week to share his path, his mission, and his recent work as an anchorite. Please join me in welcoming to our show James Twyman. Welcome, James.
Hi, it's so great to be here. Thanks for having me on the program, Victor.
And thank you for joining us and sharing your mission and your story. When we first met in the mid-1990s at the New Seminary of New York, you were introduced to us as the Peace Troubadour and performed wonderful and inspiring music. For those of our listeners meeting you for the first time, please share your early path and how it evolved.
Well, it's always so challenging to see where things begin, because they begin in so many different places. But specifically, the Peace Troubadour path, which is still very much an important part of my life today, that really started, I guess, in 1994. It had to do with a conference that had taken place in Assisi, the home of Saint Francis, back a few years earlier, when Pope John Paul II called all the leaders of the different religions of the world together in Assisi. And he chose Assisi primarily because Francis was known as the first interreligious peacemaker. So he has a legacy of this peacemaking. And so the Pope called the Dalai Lama and all the different leaders together. And for the first time in history, they all sat down and they prayed the peace prayer from their tradition together. And a friend of mine who was there brought those prayers back, gave me a copy of them, and I had this remarkable experience where in 1 hour I was able to put all 12 of them to music, and I knew that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, was to share these prayers, and I wanted to share them as St. Francis would have. At that time, I thought that I wanted to be this penniless troubadour. I wanted to travel around the world as St. Francis would, with no money, nothing, just a song in my heart, literally. And that's how it started. But then things shifted when I started getting invited to war zones and areas of great conflict in the world, the first being Bosnia and Croatia during the Balkan War. I had an experience there where I was brought up into the mountains to be with this spiritual and mystical community known as the Emissaries of Light. And they had a message that they wanted to deliver to the world. And I was with them and ultimately came back and wrote my first book based on that story, Emissary of Light. And everything changed. The book did very well. I was no longer a penniless troubadour. But To jump ahead, I mean, there have been so many other chapters, other countries I've visited, being invited, for example, to Iraq by Saddam Hussein at the same time we were beginning a bombing campaign against that country, or a few years ago during a peace concert on a hill looking into a Syrian village held by ISIS. But I think more recently, the way that I've come full circle would be an experience I had earlier this year, January and February of 2020, when I wrote a musical based on the life of St. Francis. This was in support of a book I had just written called Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. And I wanted to travel across the country doing this one-man musical based upon his life, penniless, with no idea how I was getting from place to place or how I would travel or where I would stay, all the way from the West Coast to the East Coast, where I would perform it for 2 weeks as an off-Broadway musical. In fact, you know, I think you said I met your son when I was there, and it was one of the most remarkable experiences of my life. And being able to come full circle like that, from that original inspiration of wanting simply to imitate Francis and to live this extraordinary radical life, and I don't think it's ever going to stop. It's just going to keep getting more and more radical, I hope.
Absolutely. My son had interviewed you when you were performing the musical at the Church of the East Village here in New York City. And one of the things you shared with him at that time was the outreach that you were performing while performing the musical. What is the approach to the downtrodden that you prescribe?
Well, first of all, I was with my friend Bill Free. We were traveling across the country together. And we did have a rule that we could not have any money at all during that whole 2 month period. This is very similar to what St. Francis felt. He would not allow his brothers to receive money. They could receive food and things like that, but everything else they would turn over to the poor. So along the way on the journey, there were many people who would literally stuff money into our pockets because they just didn't understand what we were doing, or give us money. And we would always tell them, we can't keep it. We're just going to give it away to the homeless that we meet in the streets. And there were times when we would have $100 or more in our pocket from people. We would go out into the streets and find homeless people. We would just pass the money over to them. But in New York, it was really interesting because this was the first time a show had been done in New York where the primary audience was the homeless. So we would go out every day and we would pass out tickets to the show to anyone that we met on the street. And this was in the end of February, so it was very cold. And we would find them, we would bring them in. We had hundreds of people who had donated hats and blankets and sleeping bags, anything that they needed to keep warm. We even had so many people who donated dog food and dog treats so we could give their pets the same treatment. And every day we did the show, they would come in and half or more of the audience was filled with people from the street. You know, it just really was a way for us to follow the example of Francis. I love, by the way, that you introduced him as Giovanni, because very few people know that his real name, I guess you could say, his baptized name was Giovanni. And that's why I titled that book Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. Very few people know that. But this is certainly what he would have done. I think this is how he would have set an example. And I think it's an example that's very much needed today.
David Gilmour of Pink Floyd composed a song in 1987 called On the Turning Away. The lyrics said in part, "No more turning away from the weak and the weary. No more turning away from the coldness inside. Just a world that we all must share. It's not enough just to stand and stare. Is it only a dream that there'll be no more turning away?" How may those of us who are civilians, so to speak, take on your mantle of love?
First of all, thank you for sharing that beautiful song. I love David Gilmour, but I've never heard that song. That is, it sounds like something St. Francis would have said or written. And, you know, the answer to your question, Victor, is really so simple. We just have to have eyes to see. Instead of walking around with blinders on, always self-concerned, always thinking about our own needs, if we open up our eyes and look around, we're going to constantly be shown who it is that we can reach out to, who it is that we can offer assistance to. You know, there's a prayer that I put to music back in, I guess that was in 1994 also, when I put a prayer that Mother Teresa had written based upon a prayer that you mentioned earlier, the prayer of St. Francis. By the way, I never know if I should mention this or not, but I will, because not that it's important, but because I think it's interesting that Francis himself did not write the prayer of St. Francis.
Absolutely.
No one actually knows who wrote the prayer of St. Francis, but it certainly does encompass everything he was about, everything he lived. But Mother Teresa, she took that prayer and she wrote a prayer around the central theme, which is the line, "It is in giving that we receive." So Mother Teresa's prayer, which is called the Servant Prayer, begins by saying, "When I am hungry, give me someone that I can feed. When I am thirsty, give me someone that I can give a drink to. When I am cold, give me someone to keep warm." I put that song to music in 1994 because it so impressed me as the heart of Francis, of that prayer. And I think it's also the answer to your question, that if we simply reach out and give to others that which we are longing for ourselves, then we realize that that which we are seeking is always within us, because we can't give away something we don't have. So if I feel lonely and I reach out to another to love them, to keep company with them, I realize that I've always been loved. If I give a drink to someone, I realize that I had that drink to give another person, even when I'm thirsty. So it really is opening up our eyes to see that which is always in front of us. And if we want to use a Christian language, the Christ is always in front of us in its varied disguises. Everywhere I look, I can see the face of Christ, or however else you want to see that. But to know that by loving that one, whoever it is, in all its distressing disguises, I'm actually loving the divine.
Absolutely. And Christ, for those who are not aware, means the anointed. What does anointing mean to you?
Well, I'm a great lover of another wonderful Franciscan, Richard Rohr. He has a great definition of the Christ. He said that the Christ is another name for everything. So the truth is that we are all anointed. We in a traditional Christian perspective, we think of Jesus as being the Christ or the anointed one, which certainly was true, but not at the expense of you or me or anyone else. And in fact, Jesus made that very clear. He said, "Far greater things will you do." And if we realize that each one of us is anointed, in other words, every one of us is blessed, every one of us is holy, every one of us is the beloved of God, we just need to open our eyes and to accept that. And as we said before, to become the source of that to others. This is how we really learn to receive this gift, is by giving it away, by being the source of this anointing to others. I realize that this has always been the truth of who I am. And it you know, it's so simple, Victor. If we just allow it to be simple and stop trying to overcomplicate that which needs no complication, well, then I think the rest will happen on its own.
And your message brings to mind another lyric from 1970. I'm a big guy when it comes to lyrics that touch me in certain ways. From Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues in his song Question, where he says, "When you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant for you."
That's right. I love that song.
How important has music been in delivering your message?
Oh, it's been essential. You know, I've written many books and done a lot of wonderful, fun things, but I think I'm a musician and a peace troubadour first. This is really where it all started for me. You know, recently I was able to make contact again with The young priest, he was young at the time, no longer, but Father Vince Ferraro, who was our assistant pastor at our Catholic church when we lived in a small town in New York, and it was Vince who taught me how to play guitar. And I look back at that now, when I was 12 years old, as a turning point in my life. And it just took hold, and I realized that, as St. Augustine said, when you sing, you pray twice. There's something about music that transcends just the talking or the conceptual information that we usually share. The way I look at it, Victor, is that when we hear someone talking, you know, anyone listening to this interview right now, the information is going in through the front door of our consciousness. And right behind that door, there are many filters based upon our past, beliefs, experiences that we've had. And that information has to pass through all of those filters before it lands in our heart. And maybe only some of it makes it through. But music slides into the back door. And there are no filters in the back door. And so the message, the light, the frequency slides in and touches our heart completely. And I've always known that. I've always felt it. And I realized very early on I was not meant to be a rock star. But when those peace prayers came to me and I was given the mission of being the peace troubadour, I knew that this would be the central theme and extension of my life. And it continues to this day and probably always will.
Now, you entered the Brotherhood at an early age, right?
I did, when I was 18.
And how did that happen?
Well, it first started, when I was probably 13, we had moved to Peoria, Illinois, and I was attending the Catholic grade school there, and I was an altar boy. And one day during Mass, I was sitting up on the altar. I think the priest was probably delivering the sermon, and I had a holy card in my pocket of St. Francis. And on one side, there was a picture of Francis. On the other side, there was the prayer of St. Francis that we mentioned before. And I was looking at this holy card, and suddenly something happened, one of those experiences that you can't quite put words to, but it was as if it began to glow, or a light was shining from this picture. And I felt this overwhelming sense of being loved and embraced by the divine. And I was looking at this picture of Francis, and that love I was feeling just returned to him. And I knew from that moment on that I wanted to be like him. I wanted to be a friar. I wanted to follow him, just as he inspired so many thousands of people to do when he was alive. I wanted to be one of them. And two interesting follow-ups to that story. I ended up holding on to that holy card. It was just put into a drawer. And then, you know, I mentioned those peace prayers, and when I put them together in 1 hour. But something happened right before that, maybe 2 or 3 days before I put the peace prayers to music. I was home with my family in Minnesota, and I was just rummaging through an old drawer that was still in my former bedroom. It still had not been cleaned out in all of those years. And I found that holy card, the same one that I had held that day when I was an altar boy. And I saw the prayer of St. Francis, and I said, I'm going to put this prayer to music. So I took my guitar into the bathroom, because, of course, the bathroom has the best acoustics. And effortlessly, within maybe 10 minutes, I put this prayer to music. And something, just as it had that day when I was an altar boy, it was like something opened up within me. And it was maybe 2 days later that I was given those peace prayers, and I had the experience of putting them all to music, which is how I became the peace troubadour. That's one story. But the other very quick one, which I think is just as interesting, I mentioned that tour that I did at the beginning of the year, traveling across the country to perform this musical based on the life of St. Francis. Well, right before we left on the tour, I had a scheduled event in St. Louis, and then a day and a half later, I had to be in Chicago. And I received a phone call. It was a message from the pastor of a Catholic church in central Illinois saying, I heard about this. I see from your schedule that you have a day in between St. Louis and Chicago. Would you come to our parish and perform this musical? Because this is actually the anniversary of the 40th year that the Franciscans took over this parish. I said, yes, of course I will, because this is my former childhood parish, the very parish where I was sitting in church with that holy card, holding it, looking at it, feeling this love, which set the tone of my whole life. So it's so interesting how all of these things come together to form this one cohesive wholeness. And music have, for me, has always been the very center of that.
Coming full circle.
And now, by the way, I'm back in the Franciscan order. I've entered an Episcopal Franciscan order where I'm a postulant. And it's once again full circle.
And we're going to talk more about that in our next segment. My guest is Brother James Twyman. James, please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and all of this work that you do.
Well, if they want to go to my personal website, it is James F as in Francis. Twyman, TWYMAN.com. We have lots of things there that people can see. And also they can learn more about our community here in Ajijic, Mexico, Namaste Lake Chapala.
And we'll be back with more of James after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
They say singing can help you remember things, so here's some tips for parents out there during these tough times.
Number one.
Make sure your kids wash their hands for 20 seconds after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside.
Two.
Virtual play dates. Social and physical distancing can help save lives.
Three.
Tell them they're safe and show your love and pride. Yes, we'll get through this together.
Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
It's time for today's STEM tip. Okay, you know recycling is important. No one wants plastic in the ocean. Here's a cool way to repurpose a plastic bottle. Build an awesome terrarium. Cut a large plastic bottle in half and fill the base with sand, pebbles, potting soil, and your favorite plant. I chose an African violet. Put the top of the bottle over your base and place it in the sun. Your plant will grow sealed in its own ecosystem. Fun, right? Learn more at She Can STEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Brother James Twyman. James, you had talked about an Anglican community and becoming a postulant. It's the Anglican community of Francis and Claire. What is a postulant and how were you called to this?
Well, there are different stages when one enters into a religious community like this. And it usually begins, of course, there's, you know, you do your candidacy, which is when you're just sort of checking things out, and they're checking you out to see if one does have a call, if they really are called to that sort of expression. But when someone enters, they enter as a postulant. Usually, postulancy is about a year program where they're just beginning their formation. They go from postulant to novice and then to being professed. So when I was with the Franciscans when I was 18, because I had entered the Catholic Franciscans right out of high school, I was a postulant there as well. And I was there for about 2 years. And I left and met my wife, Linda. We had our daughter. So it didn't seem like that was ever going to happen again. But now here I am. I'm in my late 50s, and my life has always sort of circled around Francis. And I've always felt very Franciscan in everything that I do. I've written books about Francis. And so I thought, you know, there was this beautiful Episcopal Anglican community, and it would allow me to continue to work in my ministry as the Peace Troubadour, but to also be part of a vibrant community. And I'm just so happy to be on this journey with so many amazing men and women.
Now, it's Francis and Claire. Virtually everyone knows who St. Francis was. Who is St. Claire?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, because you're right. Not so many people know who Claire is, and that's really a shame, because Claire is just as essential and important in this story as Francis was. So Claire was one of the most sought after women in Assisi at that point. She was the closest thing that they had to royalty. Her family were nobility. And Claire was the eldest daughter and was, of course, meant to be given away to bring other great families of that era together. But Claire always had a very deep love of God and of serving the poor. And there was this crazy guy at that time who had been the rich playboy of Assisi, everyone knew and loved, who did this amazing, crazy thing of stripping naked in front of the whole town and leaving all of his money and everything behind to serve the poor. And his name was Francesco Bernardone, St. Francis. And Claire was so moved by this example. They would meet in secret, and she would tell Francis of her desire to live as he and the other brothers were living. And finally, they received permission from Bishop Guido for Claire to in stealth to sneak away, because of course her family were completely against anything other than marriage for Claire. But she snuck away and met down at the little chapel of the Portiuncola, which is below Assisi. And Francis received her and cut her hair. And when her family finally figured out where she was and came to retrieve her, it was too late, because at that time, for someone like Claire, for her hair to have been cut, that was it. But Claire ended up founding what's called the Poor Claire Order, the second order within the Franciscan community, and still very vibrant today. And, you know, it's interesting that when, even in Francis's own life, the brothers were always bickering about making the life easier, or can they simplify it so it didn't have to be so harsh. Claire and her community never went through that. They were always so true to the original vision. Even today, that's true. And there were at least two times in Claire's life where she saved the town of Assisi from ruin, from being overwhelmed by military forces, through prayer. And even though she was a cloistered sister, her vibrant example drew popes and kings and emperors to her side so that they could hear her wisdom. So once, like I said, it's a shame that not enough people know who Claire is. It's also a shame that not very many people really know much about Francis. They just think of him as the saint of the bird bath or the saint of the animals, when he was so much more than that. And Claire certainly was standing right by his side the entire time.
And let's talk about St. Francis a little bit. As we had mentioned in the introduction to the show and you touched upon, he was born into a family of wealth, lived much of a playboy existence, and then he had a transformation. What happened?
Well, first of all, you have to know that the time Francis lived in, oh, in many ways is very similar to what we experience today. Very divisive. Everyone was very separate. Countries didn't go to war with countries usually. It was towns or areas or the Pope going to war with the emperor. And in Assisi, their rival was Perugia, which is the town very, very close by. And Perugia was a papal state and a papal city, rather, and Assisi was an independent city, so they were always fighting. And the two cities went to war. And Francis at that time, as you mentioned, he was chivalrous, and he was the most popular man in the whole town. So he rode off on the best horse in the best suit of armor. The Assisians were slaughtered. Francis was captured along with the other nobility and thrown into prison, into this dank hole, really, for a year, where he basically had the chance to look at his life and to realize just how ridiculous it had been. And he began this slow transformation. He was released finally after a year when he was ransomed, and he was different. He didn't want to be the reveler that he was before. He would go off and just be in nature. And basically, he was being stripped of his former identity. And then one day, he was in a tiny chapel right below Assisi called San Damiano. And he was looking at this beautiful cross that was there. The chapel itself was falling to ruin. And he saw Jesus come to life on the crucifix. And he said to Francis, "Can't you see my church is falling to ruin? Rebuild my church."
At the time, the story is, of course, his name was Giovanni, and he heard Jesus on the cross calling him Francis.
Yes, well, no one ever called him Giovanni. Okay, the story there, no one really even knew that was his name. Everyone thought he was Francis. The story was that when he was born, his father was away. He was a cloth merchant. He was away in France. And so he was born, and because the father wasn't there to give him his name, his mother said, okay, his name will be Giovanni, and which is John. And he was baptized Giovanni. And when his father came back, he said, nope, I don't like that name. I love France, so we're going to call him Francesco. From the time he was an infant, well, really, it was the little Frenchman. That's how everyone referred to him. So very few people even knew that his baptism name was Giovanni, because from the time he was an infant, he was called Francesco.
Oh, okay. Yes. And when Jesus called him from the cross, he called him Francis.
That's right, exactly. And that's when it all began. And Francis began slowly giving everything away, all of his father's money, begging for stones, which was not very appropriate for this very high, very rich Assisian. And ultimately, as we said before, stripping naked in front of the whole town, giving back not only his clothes to his father, but his name. Well, he gave back his clothes and then even said to his father, "I now give my name back as well, and I say only, Our Father who art in heaven." Those are the great words that led to him walking out of Assisi and beginning his new ministry.
With the pandemic and the social upheaval that followed, many of us were thrust into physical separation. You made a conscious choice to become an anchorite. What is an anchorite?
Okay, here we go. An anchorite, many people have heard of the idea through people like Julian of Norwich. She was probably the most famous anchorite in the 13th century. During medieval times, it was a rather popular decision. Not a lot of people made, but at one time in England, there was as many as 150 anchorites or anchoresses, because a woman was an anchoress, a man was an anchorite. Basically, it was similar to being a hermit, but right in the middle of town. And a hermit would go off into a cave or a cabin off in the distance and be totally alone. An anchorite would typically have a tiny shelter or enclosure built onto an existing church, very small. There would usually be two or three windows. One would look into the church so the man or the woman could attend Mass. Another one would look onto the street so people could come and talk to them, seek spiritual guidance, bring food, that kind of thing. And when an anchorite or an anchoress would enter this enclosure, the door would literally be bricked up behind them, and they would never leave again for the rest of their life. In Julian's case, or we should say Mother Juliana, because that's really as she was known at that time, she lived in her anchor hold for over 40 years, never leaving once, and had a life of deep devotion and deep prayer. And Julian, or Juliana rather, lived during four different rounds of the Black Plague. And, you know, we obviously are going through so much today, but imagine what it would be like to live in an era where the pandemic wiped out literally half the population. That's what happened during Julian's time. Mm. And yet here she was in this anchor hold praying, holding this energy. And that tradition faded away. I don't know if there's been a true anchorite for many, many, many years, maybe even centuries. But I've always had a deep love for the idea and the tradition. And it struck me in the midst of this current pandemic that the need for that contemplative life in the midst of so many other people being isolated and sequestered against their will was really required and important, that radical example. So I chose to become a modern anchorite, not for the rest of my life, but for at least 1 year.
And what are your daily activities as an anchorite?
Well, because I am a Franciscan, I do follow the daily office or the Common Book of Prayer in the Anglican tradition. So I pray in an organized way between 5 and 7 times a day. And then the rest of my day is spent chanting or singing or just meditating and just seeking that deep communion. My little enclosure is right in the heart of our Namaste community here in Mexico. It consists of one tiny little room, which is just barely big enough for a twin bed where I sleep. There are no windows in that room. It's almost like being in a cave, and sometimes it leaks, so it is like being in a cave. And then the tiny room where I'm sitting right now, which is just big enough for a desk and a tiny bathroom. The outside part, I could probably take 7 steps in one direction and 5 in the other. So that's how big it is, very small. And my goal, as I said, is just to seek that deep communion through prayer, through meditation, through singing, and to just let go and to release who I thought I was and to realize who I truly am and to live there in that energy.
What a wonderful practice.
It's been deep. I've only been here so far for 3 weeks, Victor, and so I have a long way to go in my year, but I did take vows. The bishop from Guadalajara came and blessed me. I took vows with him, and so this is a very serious thing to me, and I have to say, I don't want that year to pass very quickly, because it's like sipping a fine glass of wine. It has been just the most beautiful, devoted thing I've ever done.
My guest is Brother James Twyman. James, please tell our listeners where they can find out more information about you and this wonderful work.
Well, they can go to my website, which is James F. S. and Francis Twyman, TWYMAN.com. And there are all sorts of links there. They can find out more about our community in Mexico or just the work that we're doing.
And we'll be back with more of James after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is David Strickle. I'm excited to share my brand new show, The Stream of David Live, right here on Om Times Radio. Each week, I'll have exciting guests, and I'll channel the eternal wisdom of The Stream, a group of non-physical entities whose teachings have transformed lives all over the world. So join us for an uplifting hour each Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. That's The Stream of David Live right here on Om Times Radio.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest on this inaugural show is Brother James Twyman. James, you were talking about the book Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. Tell us about that, please.
Well, many people know about the Camino de Santiago, which is a very ancient 1,200-year-old Camino walking to Santiago in Spain. And as I said, people have been doing this for centuries. Francis himself walked the Camino of Santiago. But there are other Caminos. One of them is the Camino of St. Francis, which is walking in the footsteps of Francis himself on the way to Assisi. And it begins in a beautiful monastery called Laverna, high in the Tuscan mountains, and goes through towns where there are great stories of the different things that happened to Francis or miracles that occurred, and finally arriving in Assisi, and then even continuing on from there. I've walked it several times myself. It's about 110 miles, and I've brought a number of groups on it. And I think it was the first time I ever walked. I began playing with a story in my mind of a fictional woman who is older and who has had a very difficult life, and she decides to walk this Camino, even though she doesn't really believe in God or anything like that. But she ends up meeting this young man, a young Italian man named Giovanni, and he walks with her and helps her through his stories of the life of St. Francis to heal her heart. And there's a big twist at the end, which I won't give away, but it's a beautiful story. I wanted it to be a movie. It almost became an Italian film, but I finally decided I'm going to sit down and write this book because it's such a charming story. And so it came out last year with Beyond Words Press. And really, that's how the musical started as well. The musical, one-man musical on the life of St. Francis that I've been performing, because when I was going to go on the book tour for Giovanni, I wanted to do something more experiential than just talk about a book. So I ended up writing that musical, and I've even written a second musical, which I'll be sharing virtually during the Christmas season this year. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Francis, he started a lot of different movements. One of them was the whole tradition of the nativity scene. Mm. He started that tradition in a town called Greccio. And so I've written another Christmas musical based upon Francis's story starting that nativity tradition. So I just can't seem to get away from him. But that Giovanni book has definitely been one of the more fun ways that I've expressed my love of the saint.
Would you share the prayer with us, please?
I would love to. As I said before, this is kind of where it all started, with that holy card and then years later putting it to music. And I'm going to do something, Victor, that I don't usually do, but I'm feeling guided. Because usually the prayer begins with the words, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. But what I have found is that when we claim that we are instruments of peace, then the experience rushes in, because that is the truth. We are all instruments of peace if we would just simply allow ourselves to be played like this ukulele that I'm playing here. We often think that we should be able to play ourselves, but it's only when we surrender into the arms of the beloved that the strings of our heart begin to vibrate. So this is the prayer of St. Francis, and I'll be singing, I am an instrument of your peace. Oh Lord, I am an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, bring your love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, your faith. Where there is despair, your hope. Where there is darkness, I am your light. And where there is sadness, your joy. Oh, Divine Master, grant that we may not seek to be consoled as to console. To be we understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. I am now your instrument, beloved. For it is in giving that we receive, in pardoning that we are pardoned, and in dying to ourselves that we live. Instrument of your peace. Of your peace.
Beautiful, James. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
James, how may we offer the gift of presence at a time where physical presence is so restricted?
My goodness, you ask good questions. The gift of presence. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, my favorite quote from Francis is when he said, I'm going to adapt it very slightly. He said, our only job is to teach love wherever we go, and only when necessary to use words. Because he recognized that the real extension, the real teaching is about presence. It's not about words. We've all been with people who, you know, say all the right words, who have all the right information in their head and love to talk about it. And yet sometimes we just feel intuitively that something's not connecting within us. Something's not on fire within us. But we also have probably met people who say very little, who don't feel the need to talk about spiritual things all the time. And yet when we're with them, something comes alive within us. Something starts to burn within us. A fire is ignited. And that's what the presence is all about. And that's what Francis had. Francis had a presence that when you were with him, you wanted to leave everything behind and join him. There's a saying, that the movie Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, which Franco Zeffirelli directed back in the early 70s, a great movie about Francis that if you haven't seen, I really recommend. It's an interesting version, really captures the spirit. But there's a saying that it's hard to watch that movie even and not want to leave everything behind and become a Franciscan brother or sister. Once again, it's the presence, and presence is all about love. It's about the radiation of that love and just being the vessel or the instrument of that love. And this is what is so desperately needed today. We don't need more talk. We don't need more concepts. What we need more is people who share that presence. And I've always said that Francis lived at the very end of the Dark Ages. And yet, the presence that he brought and inspired in others was the initiating point of the Renaissance, a time of great light and creativity. And I really believe that we're living at the end of a very dark age today. But if we can imitate that same presence that Francis brought, or that other people have brought and are bringing today, I believe we could initiate a new renaissance, which is so desperately needed. And it's all through presence.
At the end of the day, it's all about love, isn't it?
Yep, that's right. And it's so simple. Francis's example was contagious because it was simple. There was nothing complex. There was nothing even intellectual about it. It was just that presence.
Presence, love, and service. My guest, Brother James Twyman. James, one more time, please tell us about your work, your website, and also about the community of Namaste Lake.
Namaste Lake Chapala is right outside Guadalajara. There's an area here called Ajijic, or just the whole area around Lake Chapala, which is the biggest expat community in the whole world for Americans and Canadians. I don't no hablo español or muy un poquito, so, but this area, there's so many Americans and Canadians, you don't really need to learn Spanish. And we have this beautiful community here, Namaste, where we have 41 houses or apartments and people living from all over the world, just sharing everything we talked about here today. And we actually have our sessions, our morning sessions, on email or YouTube. You can join us every morning through Zoom. My suggestion would be to go to my website, James F., as in Francis, Twyman, TWYMAN.com, and get on our email list, and we'll send you the link so you can join us every morning here for our morning session, which I broadcast from inside my anchor hold. They're all right outside my wall, but I'm deep inside here. And come visit us if you ever want to.
That's wonderful. James, thank you for this work of inspiration, this work of greatness, this work of love. Thank you so much.
It is my pleasure, Victor. Thank you for inviting me to be on the program.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.